Good evening. I think maybe all of you, or most of you, you know the word mudra, the Sanskrit word mudra. Yeah. Usually, when we do zazen instruction, we tell people about the hand posture. And the Sanskrit word refers to a gesture of the hands, and also a stamp or a seal. You might stamp, put a seal on a letter. Putting seals on things seems to be an ancient human gesture that we make. Indus Valley civilizations in northwest India, Mohenjo-Daro and Harappa, they found a lot of these little cylinder seals that were used for making seal marks in clay. So it's been around a long time. And this one is usually called the cosmic mudra. Right now, because of some structural difficulties, I have my right leg on top of my left, and that is usually what you see in Buddhist iconography. The Bodhisattva and Buddha figures often have the right leg on top to indicate that they are actively engaged in transforming beings. And I won't go so far as to say I'm doing that, but it's too hard to put the left leg on top, so I have the right leg on top, and my teacher suggested maybe it's better for the body-mind if, when you do that, you have the right hand on top of the left, even though usually the way it's taught is you put the left on top of the right, so that the more yin side of the body is dominant, and so the tendency to stillness is enhanced. So this, I was thinking the other day, this gesture, you know, sometimes you see people make it very, very flat. And sometimes it's kind of extreme. But as I was taught it, it makes a kind of egg shape, kind of an oval. And Mrs. Ikiro, she showed me, you overlap the fingers, so not the whole hand like this, but just the fingers. And he had a broken finger, so it looked kind of funny when he did it. But it was like basically like this, and then he put it down his lap and just arched the fingers. And I noticed that scientists have they've come up with a kind of a graphic representation of the kind of our known universe and the so-called the cosmic microwave background. You've heard of that. And the shape is actually like this, of that graphic. It's an oval with all of these little sparkles of light in there. So this is indeed the cosmic mudra. And intimately reflects something about our universe and our place in it. And this gets at some of the power of mudra, the power of gestures, and the effect that they have on the body-mind, both in expression and in changing what's happening in the body-mind. In India, there's a whole science of gesture, a whole science of mudra, and it's particularly important in esoteric Buddhism, so-called. Well, people use the word secret, but it's not supposed to be secret. It's supposed to be intimate. So you don't broadcast the instructions to everybody. You whisper them in the student's ear. So again, secrecy isn't the point, but intimacy is. So there are a lot of gestures in esoteric Buddhism. You've probably seen some of them. You know this one. I don't know what it's called, but have you seen this before? This is the world mandala with these fingers are Mount Sumeru, the world mountain that's in the middle of our cosmology according to ancient Buddhist view. And each of these things you're doing, each represents one of the four continents that surround our universe. So often this gesture is made when there's an offering being made of the whole universe to the Buddhas and ancestors. Well, let's see. How do I describe this? And then you use the first finger, the index finger, to bend back over the second finger. It's a little tricky, but that's like step one, okay? So you use your index fingers to bend them back over the second finger. Then you put your third finger back to back. Right? That's Mount Sumeru. And then you use your thumbs and bend back gently, each opposing little finger. You got it? With a mala? Uh-huh. Yeah, it's a trip. Yeah. And yeah. Yeah, kind of. But is it? Oh, cool. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, excellent. Okay, so these they make a difference in the body mind. This one certainly does, cosmic mudra. You see the Buddha figures making a variety of gestures. There's this lovely the Dharma Chakra Pavartana gesture, the turning the Dharma wheel. There's this gesture that is made by the primordial Buddha, Vairochana, which is multiplicity and unity in one gesture, at the heart, held at the heart level. And then the one that I've been enchanted with recently is this one. You know this one? No? This is called, variously, the Abhaya Mudra, or sometimes the Abhayadana Mudra, which means the non-fear gesture, or sometimes the giving, the granting of no fear gesture. The Buddhas make this gesture. Sometimes you also see this hand up. I don't know, quite a variety of statues out there, but maybe this is the most typical one. And I was thinking that that looks like Dharma Chakra Pavartana to me, but I can't quite see it from here. Yeah, something very similar to that. Yeah. And then, of course, you know this one, very important, the Bhumi Sparsha, the Shakyamuni Buddha touching the earth, bringing his mother to witness his effort, right? And also a gesture of intense groundedness. But this one, at some point I had the thought that Buddha was not boasting about his or her fearlessness. This was not to say, I'm fearless, how about you? This is... this is our fearlessness that Buddha is demonstrating. So it's not some reminder, y'all ought to be fearless. This is our fearlessness that Buddha is demonstrating and inviting us to remember. So you may think, I don't have any fearlessness. But the fearlessness that you can kind of dismiss that way, that's not what Buddha means by this. This is our immense, unshakable, ungraspable spirit, which we are born with, all of us. If we hear that sort of thing, we may think of times when we were like afraid, when we felt fear, and we may think that that's excluded. It's like, oh no, if you're feeling fear, then you are apart from this. And that's simply untrue. Okay. Our human spirit, the fearlessness of our human spirit, is way beyond the fluctuations of some feeling. And I'm getting old, and so I trot out my favorite little hobby horse sayings, and I know I've mentioned before the great Dharma teacher Chögyam Trungpa, who often talked about fearlessness, and he too said, as practitioners of the Buddha way, we're not going to wait around till we can't see anything in here that we could call fear. We're not going to wait for that. What we do as followers of the Buddha way is, whatever's happening, we stay in the saddle. Whatever is happening, we stay in the saddle. And he said, you might be so afraid that you stand up in the stirrups and vibrate like a tuning fork, but you stay in the saddle. And this is the gesture of, you are in the saddle, always. You're never anywhere else. You cannot betray your own spirit. You can get confused. But if you get confused, why don't you make this gesture and remind yourself, you're in the saddle. And whatever you think is happening, maybe something scary is going on. There's an earthquake or you may be like walking on a slippery sidewalk and you feel yourself about to go over. And there's a sudden spike of something. You're still in the saddle. And this spirit, when you are making this gesture, either literally or figuratively, That is, this is Abhayadana. This is the grant, the gift of fearlessness to everyone. From your own fearlessness. To remind everyone of their own fearlessness. Which means, I may be vibrating with fear, but my spirit is brilliant. Brilliant and ungraspable. Sometimes people say, I don't know, Buddha nature, but something like that. Spirit is just as good. So whenever you see that statue, Buddha is inviting all of us to make the gift of fearlessness from ourselves to each other, back and forth, to all beings who might, well, maybe they're not so acquainted yet with their brilliant spirit. So this is to help, as is this one, or this one. I think it's important to have some acquaintance with how things really are, how we really are, reality as it is, and how each of us reflects the real universe as one body, and a body that includes all other bodies too. So sitting in stillness is really helpful in that way. It enables the our intuition, if you call it that, to begin to see the ephemeral nature of the emotions coming and going, the thoughts coming and going. And at the heart of all of that is this brilliant something. Brilliant spirit. Here's one of our wonderful Zen poems that I think we recite sometimes here. The used to be called the Merging of Difference and Unity. But now I think it's called the Harmony of Difference and Equality. Is that right? That's the one? Okay. And that is Vairochana's gesture. Merging of difference and unity. Unity. Multiplicity. One phenomenal expression. From the heart of the so-called Adi Buddha, the primordial Buddha, the original Buddha, whatever that is. So that that poem probably strikes us as maybe kind of enigmatic. I was reading in Suzuki Roshi's book, Branching Streams, Flow in the Darkness, a wonderful commentary on that poem. Suzuki Roshi had this wonderful way of simultaneously delivering quite profound teachings in very simple words. So that poem, you know, has lines like, eye and sights, ear and sounds, nose and smells, tongue, tastes, and for that matter, body or skin and touch, mind and thoughts. Each of these myriad things springs forth from the root. And it says the whole process, it says must, but I sometimes think that's even superfluous, must return to the source. But the whole process does return to the source over and over. And when we take our seat in practice of zazen or meditation, we're demonstrating that. We are letting the source be the source. We're letting the expressions be the expressions. Letting it all return over and over and over again. And in that return is the source of this fearlessness. The growing certainty of how reality actually is. That poem, which is attributed to our ancient ancestor, Shorto Shichan, is kind of it's sort of poised on the boundary where Buddha Dharma, coming from India, encounters Chinese culture and then springs up anew as kind of a new flavor of Buddhism. So when you read it, it doesn't sound Indian. It doesn't sound like an Indian poem exactly. On the other hand, the truth that it expresses is not at all at variance with teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha, Nagarjuna, and others. But the expression is in the Chinese vein, bringing some Indian concepts, expressing them in the Chinese context so that people growing up in that culture could find an entree into Buddha Dharma. So lines like, right in light there is darkness, but don't see it as darkness. Right, in darkness there is light, but don't take it as light. Right? I don't, I guess you could figure out how to say that in Sanskrit, but that's not, it isn't an Indian expression. It's a very Chinese expression. And yet, the notion that's being expressed is perfectly consistent with the Buddha's teaching. In the light of consciousness is the profound and ungraspable darkness of reality. Can't touch it. Can't get away from it. Doesn't matter what you call it. And in the darkness of everything returning to the source, there is still the spark of consciousness. The eye and the sights, the ear and the sounds and so forth. This is still these streams flowing in the dark. Again, a Chinese expression, but definitely Buddha's teaching. So it's pretty important for us to become familiar with our intimacy, our already established intimacy with things as they are. To realize that in practicing the Buddha way, we're not really acquiring anything new. We're coming to know reality and to experience the joy of our bright spirit, which you can't grasp it. And yet, as Dogen says elsewhere, it is never apart from one, right where one is. And these teachings, as time goes on, become your own. And then, kind of oddly, as they do so, they kind of, I don't know how to say it exactly, they kind of slip away. Or maybe it's that they slip in. So that you're not walking around juggling a bunch of teachings. They're in us. And our practice is constantly turning them. The Sanskrit expression for that is bhavana, prajna, the wisdom of deep cultivation. And at that point, it becomes harder and harder to figure out, are you a Buddhist? Are you this? Are you that? Maybe you're actually with Christian people of faith. Suddenly, you're a Christian. With Muslims, suddenly, you're a Muslim. And you realize humanity is drinking from the same spotless source. Everyone. This may put you at odds with people who are determined that their gang gets to the top, right, and plants the flag on. Okay. This is called triumphalist religion and is best avoided. And if you run into some people who like that way, be careful. You might want to quietly take your leave before they try to burn you at the stake or something. But that approach, that experience of spirituality, if I can use that word, is fear-based. So they have not yet come to recognize that this is they. This is who they are, too. So they have to defend, and assert. In so doing, often cause a fair amount of pain and trouble, rather than reducing that, which is what we're about. If somehow our engagement with the life of the spirit is causing pain and trouble, I think something's wrong. It's very easy to just sit here in the quiet with you folks. It's much easier than when I'm by myself. So I'm grateful for that opportunity. Often when I'm by myself, I might think, oh, I should be doing something. But here, feels like this is what we're doing. Just all of us sitting here like this. And making sure that the world will know that Buddha is not up there. Buddha is here. So remember, even if you're standing up in the stirrups, vibrating like a tuning fork, you're in the saddle. And your fearlessness can be a beacon for countless other beings, even when you're afraid. Maybe you have some question or comment. Yeah.
Excuse me, would you please repeat the name of the mudra and spell it? I don't hear that.
Mm-hmm. The Sanskrit word is abhaya. The word bhaya is fear. And you put the so-called alpha privative at the beginning, it means not fear. So, abhaya mudra, or sometimes abhaya dana mudra, which means bestowing, not fear. Okay? Mm-hmm. Yes.
When I visited Rinzai monasteries, they do this?
Yes. This is Rinzai mudra.
Is that a mudra, or is that just comfortable?
It's a mudra.
Okay.
Yeah. They, it's definitely held against the hara. Part of this kind of energy circuit. Their style's a little higher voltage, so this works well for them, right? And then, sort of like us, if you're kind of getting kind of foggy, your hands will kind of drift away. The same with them. So, their long hours of zazen, hands may start to droop, and then oh wait. Usually somebody will scream at them, so help them. But yeah, that's a mudra also. I'm not sure. It almost qualifies as what the Chinese called forked hands, but that's a little more like this. And in their case, I think they grasp the hands. So this is a kind of an energetic style. Yes?
I know that you have a lot of responsibilities in San Francisco. You come here to talk. I'm sure you probably go to other places to talk. But when you said you have time alone, do you actually have time alone?
I do. I hang out in my room with the door shut. And Okay, sometimes I watch TV, all right? Yes. Yes. But I also read and a little altar where I'm supposed to do a little service every day, which I don't always do, but often. And yeah, I get to be alone. Yeah. And it's kind of a luxury in our society, you know. Some amount of solitude is very helpful, and some would say essential for our mental health. To have some quiet, alone time. It doesn't have to be much, necessarily, but it's very useful.
You mentioned that Shogun Trungpa talked about fearlessness, as does his, you know, famous student Pema Chodron.
Yes.
They also talk about, in the same context, and I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit, of the warrior, the Bodhisattva
mm-hmm.
warrior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The warrior is just staying in the saddle. That's all that means. And you know that you don't have to go anywhere else. You don't have to get off the horse. Maybe you can't even. But you are staying in the saddle. And a warrior recognizes that no matter what particular emotional thing is happening. The warrior is not confused. It's like, oh, well, I would call this fear, but I am still in the saddle. I am still bringing my spirit into the world, whatever is happening. Even if I'm going like this, but sometimes a great shout will help. In Zen, sometimes people shout. Anybody want to shout? I know something bothers some people, so if you'd rather we didn't, it's okay. But sometimes it really clears things up. Anybody want to do that? Who does not want that to happen? Okay, good enough. All right, we won't do that tonight. Okay. Yes? Yes, that's an element. And being present just means you can't be anywhere else. You're always present. You may think you're not, but you are. So that's why I say, really, there isn't anywhere else but the saddle. And staying in the saddle acknowledges that.
The rider?
The writer maybe has heard that teaching and is acknowledging that with his or her or their whole body being present. Yeah. Yes.
Well, this may sound kind of weird, but it seems like the practice does change our bodies in a way. Like suddenly I began to notice that, I don't know, I used to kind of be like this, and then at some point, my body just kind of went like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt more like self-contained or something.
Mm-hmm.
And one time I was in a like 3-day sesshin, and I was sort of sitting with anger like for about 2 days. And then on the third day, the anger just wished away. And then I went home, and my husband said, "You're walking differently now."
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. My first teacher used to say that Zazen changes the body on the cellular level. Zentatsu Baker. Actually, I could get away with saying Suzuki Roshi was. He put my feet on the path, but then he died. So then his successor was my teacher, and he used to say that. The cellular level. I think he's right.
I remember Rep saying he first saw Suzuki walking past him, and he thought, "I can learn from those feet."
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's that, I think it's from the Psalms. I think there's in the Psalms, maybe. It says, something like, "How beautiful upon the mountain are the feet of those preaching the gospel of peace." Oh, okay.
How beautiful are the feet of those who preach the gospel of peace, I think is the term.
Phrase. Yes.
Two things, sort of. One, I was just a part of this yoga teacher training program, and one of the reasons I wanted to do it was to walk through some of the fear that I have of, like, getting up in front of people and speaking. Sort of staying grounded. And there was moments when I could sort of very spontaneous and kind of didn't know what came over me, you know. And then other moments where my body completely shut down and I couldn't, you know, think. Might have been lack of sleep, too, a little bit that specific day. But I find that on a day-to-day basis, it's difficult for me even just to get through, you know, the work day and really be present, you know, and really experience that intimacy and my voice or the things that I'm seeing or hearing another person breathe or sneeze, you know, and really being intimate with your surroundings, sort of aware. So I don't think that, like, maybe being a yoga teacher, well, plus it's not that interesting to me, I found out. practicing it, but certain things you may not just be ready for, right? I mean, because there's it happens on its own time, you know, that cellular sort of change, right?
One thing we don't want to do is develop the mindset where we're thinking, one day my brilliant spirit will be brilliant. Right now it's kind of tarnished and dim and I don't see it. That we can just, like, throw that out. So even when you're feeling like, oh, I totally feel like I'm shut down right now.
It's sort of beautiful, but to everybody else watching, it was like I could feel that they felt pain, it was a painful experience for them to witness when I was sort of just so overwhelmed with, like, the everything happening that I could not do anything or say anything.
And
that happens, like, in day-to-day life as well.
You were still in the saddle.
But I wasn't operating maybe the way that the audience members would have liked.
Too bad. Exactly.
Because I was thoroughly enjoying myself, really.
Excellent.
But, you know, the 20 people I was supposed to be teaching yoga to were kind of like hanging out going.
And you can give them the gift of your brilliant spirit sometimes by saying, I don't have anything to say right now. My body is very tight. And I'm just going to sit here and stay in the saddle. And if you all leave, thank you for participating with me. And I'll see you next time. And this is your brilliant spirit being given to the world over and over again. Even if it feels like, I'm not feeling very brilliant, but on some level I know I am. I know it is so. I am in the saddle.
So in, like, day-to-day life, there's this sort of pivot, like some people say, between, like you were talking about going into the mind and sort of there's all these teachings flowing around. And so everything is sort of interpreted through the lens of these teachings.
Right.
And then sort of a pivot into this intimacy with your surroundings.
Well, except that's nothing you can do. Right?
Yeah,
you can't,
sort of
make it happen.
It's just sort of happening, and it's. Does that just take time to kind of. For that intimacy just to sort of.
Well, you can't wait for it. You just.
Cultivate it?
Yeah. The way you cultivate it is moment after moment after moment. this is who I am, this is what's happening, this is true. And if you don't like it, I'm sorry. But it's still true. And this is me in the saddle. Right? Maybe vibrating, but this is me in the saddle.
Okay.
Your spirit's looking pretty good from where I sit.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. There was one other thing, but I feel like I've talked too much.
Okay. There'll be other times.
Yes, Mia, you've spoken about those who have heard the teaching and are aware that they're in the saddle. What about those who have not heard it? What do they do?
Well, they're in the saddle anyway. And you can encounter some very interesting people whose brilliant spirit is definitely, so to speak, online, and they have never heard of Buddhism. They may not have heard of anything. There may be somebody living on the street in a cardboard box, and yet their spirit is brilliant. And their way of teaching may be, I don't know, very unusual. If some of you, when you sit with Ed Brown, he tells this great story. Oh, heck, I can't remember it very well. But see if you can get him to tell the story about the doctor, young doctor in a hospital, who goes in to see this patient, who's an elderly, pretty sick African-American man. And after about 30 seconds, it's pretty clear who's in charge in that room. And the man in the bed says something like, he doesn't just ask him his name. He has some quite extraordinary way of engaging the doctor. And the doctor's kind of standing there open-mouthed. And the guy in the bed says, "Pleased to meet you." And then they have this fascinating conversation. See if you can get Ed to tell that story. It's an example of someone who's probably never heard of Buddhism, but whose spirit is brilliant, just like everyone else's, and he's quite at home with that radiance. That's why, you know, Suzuki Roshi's constantly saying Buddhism in its true sense is not Buddhism. Not in its true sense. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. In the saddle.
Yes. Where you are.
Wherever anybody is at that moment, that's the saddle.
Yeah.
Okay.
There isn't anywhere else. That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
I wanted to share with you a yoga mudra. It's called Sanmukhi Mudra.
Sanmukhi.
Mm-hmm. Sanmukhi without face.
Oh, right? Uh-huh.
And so the thumbs go in the ears to shut off the hearing.
Oh.
The top finger rests on the eyebrow. The second finger rests on the eye.
On the
eyelid.
The
third finger regulates the breathing so you can close it off or open it as you need. And then the pinky just rests on the lip.
Oh,
so
that's lovely.
So if you want a very intense experience, I recommend it.
Oh, I haven't heard of that one. That's fascinating. Yeah, thank you.
It's also called Jyoti Mudra.
Huh? Okay.
That means it's gazing at the inner light.
Yeah, Jyoti is light. Uh-huh. Light or radiance. Uh-huh.
It's very powerful. It reminds me a bit like being at the ocean.
Oh.
Really
okay.
Is
so as when like
going.
Sitting in a cross-legged posture doing that or
singing?
Sitting
oh,
cross-legged
sitting.
Or
preferably.
Preferably, huh? I see. Uh-huh. I'd like to try that.
Yeah, I was initiated, and they actually have a shoulder rest so that you can do it so that your hands are, your shoulders are, your elbows are supported.
Oh, okay.
It's a formal practice.
Oh, so. Indeed. Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty good for tonight. Thank you for your great patience and practice and your brilliant spirit.